The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Candy. You do it on this Friday morning. Doing my best not to cry for the Ukrainians after yesterday was spent with the complete bozo attempt of the White House to bring back any sort of coherence to their policy on Ukraine. The President of the United States tried to clean up desperately the terrible press conference, maybe the worst press conference in history. Yesterday, talking to White House reporters, reading, actually. They didn't let him freelance anything. He read it yesterday. His attempt to walk it back may or may not be successful, but he tried. That's what he tried to do. And Joe Biden at the White House, cut number one.
Let me start by first saying a few words about Russia and Ukraine. I've been absolutely clear with President Putin. He has no misunderstanding. If any assembled Russian units move across the Ukrainian border, that is an invasion. But it will be met with severe and coordinated economic response that I've discussed in detail with our allies, as well as laid out very clearly for President Putin. But there is no doubt, let there be no doubt at all, that if Putin makes this choice, Russia will pay a heavy price. It's also not the only scenario we need to be prepared for. Russia has a long history of using measures other than overt military action to carry out aggression. And paramilitary tactics, so-called gray zone attacks, and actions by Russian soldiers not wearing Russian uniforms. Remember when they moved into Donbass, the little green men? They were dealing with those who were Russian sympathizers and said that Russia had nobody in there. Well, that includes little green men in uniforms as well as cyber attack. We have to be ready to respond to these as well in a decisive and united way with a range of tools at our disposal. The Ukrainian foreign minister said this morning that he's confident of our support and resolve, and he has a right to be.
Well, no, he doesn't believe that. Zelensky and the foreign minister tweeted throughout the day that great powers should not forget that there are no such things as minor incursions. It may be the worst press conference in presidential history, given the consequences. Mitch McConnell went on Fox News with Bret Baier last night and discussed minor incursion. Cut number 38.
Well, if I were the president, I don't think I'd have a two-hour press conference again. But look, let's just focus on the one thing that was the most disturbing that was already covered in your setup piece, and that was a potential signal to the Russians that it's okay to take some of Ukraine. Now, I'm really glad the White House walked that back today. I hope Vladimir Putin doesn't misunderstand the message. No incursion into Ukraine is acceptable.
So that was the number one message. Leader McConnell went on and did what President Trump should have done, what President Biden should have done, doing him a bipartisan favor, showing that national security issues are bilateral issues, are bipartisan issues, and trying to undo the damage done by the president. And by the way, Kamala Harris was a train wreck yesterday on the Today Show. But then Leader McConnell was pressed by Bret Baier, okay, what is your agenda? And this is what he said, cut 39. Listen closely to Mitch McConnell.
Look, I don't think the American people are clamoring for any pieces of Build Back Better. They want us to tackle on the problems that they are concerned about. Inflation at the top of the list. A wide open border. We've already discussed the threat against Ukraine. Those are the things the American people are thinking about. The president needs to sync up his plans with things that people are interested in. They've been off on this toot over voting rights, for example. Well, 94% of the American people think it's easy to vote right now. We had a record turnout last year, the highest turnout since 1900, 120 years ago. Nobody's being discriminated against in voting. The Voting Rights Act is still intact, passed in 1965. I actually was there to witness it as a young intern here on Capitol Hill. They're making this up. Why are they doing it? They want a federal takeover of how every election in America is conducted. That is not how this country has been run for over 200 years. It's not what the American people are interested in having them do, but since 94% of them already think it's easy to vote.
So here then Brett came to me to analyze what Leader McConnell had to say, and I said cut number 41.
Hugh? I'm always impressed with the leader, Brett, methodical on message, Mitch McConnell. And he wrote in his memoir 5 years ago, The Long Game, you can start too late, but you can never start too early. And tonight you heard him start early on the fall elections. Inflation and the open southern border. Inflation and the open southern border. And drilling down on, of course, minor incursion. He probably also knows about the new poll this morning, the NBC poll, that when asked, are you a supporter of the Republican Party or a supporter of Donald Trump? 56% said the GOP, 36% said Donald Trump. Now, he avoided twice. You pressed him twice on the former president. He's not looking for a fight with Mar-a-Lago, but neither is he going to yield his leadership position. And he had two big wins last night, big enough wins that Lindsey Graham, who had thrown a couple of darts at him earlier in the week, was praising him on Twitter last night. So good week for the leader. A good message to you. Very methodical.
Very methodical Mitch. They call him Moscow Mitch. They call him the Grim Reaper. They call him, well, many, many different names for Moscow Mitch and Grim Reaper. And the master of the Senate is the one that matters, and Mr. Long Game. But I like methodical on message Mitch. President Trump, meanwhile, went on Fox News with Hannity last night, and Sean asked him about reports. As I had asked Robert O'Brien, his former national security advisor, yesterday morning, about reports that there was a rift between Ron DeSantis and President Trump. And I heard Robert O'Brien say on this show, fake news. And the president said to Sean Hannity last night, cut 37.
I get along great with Ron. Ron was very good on the Mueller hoax. He was right up front along with Jim Jordan and all of the rest of them. They were fantastic. The Republicans really stuck together, and it was a great thing. And Ron was one of them. And Ron wanted to run, and I endorsed him, and that helped him greatly. And he went on, and he's done a really terrific job in Florida. And I think, you know, Ron has been very good. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. It's totally fake news. I think Ron said last week, he said it very publicly, he says, the press is never going to get in the middle of my friendship with Donald Trump. We're not going to do that stuff. And he said it very strongly. I thought it was very interesting, actually. And very nice. But he said that, and I agree with him on that 100%. No, I have a very good relationship.
There's no rift. None. I'll be writing about this for the Washington Post today or Monday. Finally, President Trump, former President Trump, talking with Sean Hannity last night about the disastrous press conference. Let's play cut 36.
We took in hundreds of billions of dollars from China with taxes and tariffs, and companies started moving back because it was no longer so good to be there. And we had a huge impact. Then you look at what happened with, if you take a look at what happened with everything having to do with Russia, really what he said last night when he said they may go in, they will go in, and he talked about a minor incursion. And I sort of said, I don't believe he said that, because that's like giving him, you know, they use the term green light. He was green lighted. And, you know, it's very interesting because the president of Ukraine last night, he was seen in some very unusual pictures. He couldn't believe what he heard. He couldn't believe what he heard. And I couldn't believe what, if whether you're for strong stoppage or not, you're really telling him you might as well go in. And you also can't just talk in terms of sanctions, because sanctions don't mean too much to Russia. If you're want to stop somebody, you're not going to be talking just about sanctions. But he really told him, go in. I think it's a whole different ballgame right now. If you look at what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, what they've done at the border, they're loaded up with soldiers. That never happened with me. That would have never happened. I had a very good relationship with Putin. But remember, I stopped their pipeline. If we would go back to producing energy, you know, we were energy independent, first time in probably 72 years, maybe ever, but the first time in at least 72 years, we had so much energy we didn't know what to do with it. $1.87 at the pumps when I left. Now it's over $5. In California, it's over $7.
What the president will get to is pointing out that by cutting off energy production in the United States, as Joe Biden has done, he has increased the leverage that Russia has over the world, given them more money for their adventures, made Putin a rich man. Yes, Joe Biden's no good, horrible, very bad week continued yesterday. The vice president did him no favors on the Today Show. We'll cover that when I return to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Sad to report that Meatloaf, the Bat Out of Hell singer, passed away at the age of 74 overnight. I think this is one of the anthems of my generation. People liked it a lot. He's a wild guy. Had a wild look and a wild voice. Let me go back, though, to speaking of wild voice. Kamala Harris did no favors for Joe Biden and the Democrats yesterday by sitting down with Savannah Guthrie, getting pushed around because she was haughty, touchy, irascible, and unlikable. Cut number three.
The president said yesterday, among other things, that he thinks that Putin probably will invade Ukraine. Later, he said he wasn't sure, but he said he probably will go in. Is that, for all intents and purposes, acknowledging that this threat of severe sanctions that the administration has made is having no effect on Putin, that he's actually not deterred by it?
Well, I'm not going to psychoanalyze President Putin of Russia, but I will tell you this. It is clear to us that the decision is probably in his hands.
Okay. That's very helpful. Cut number five.
Speaking of democracy and politics, the president put a lot of blame yesterday on Republicans for failure to get some of these key initiatives passed. But, you know, you have a 50-50 tie in the United States Senate, as you are well aware. Did the administration fail to temper its initiatives to meet political reality? In other words, should you have been more willing to compromise to try to get all Democrats on board? These initiatives failed because Democrats weren't united, let alone Republicans. Was that an error as you look back on this year?
Well, when I look back on this year, I think about things like the bipartisan infrastructure law. Administrations, both Democrat and Republican, have tried for years.
Well, doesn't that show Republicans were willing to help if the initiatives were good?
But they tried for years to do what the American people want, and what the American people know is not an issue that should be thought of through a political lens. Things like upgrading our roads and bridges, things like cleaning out the lead pipes of America because over 50% of children under the age of 6 are exposed to lead. These are the things that are part of the accomplishments that occur through a process of compromise, yes. But what ends up happening is that the American people benefit. Broadband in that law is going to be now more accessible and affordable to Americans around the country, from rural areas to urban areas.
Well, Vice President Kamala Harris, I am way out of time. Next time they got to give us an hour so I don't have to interrupt and you can go as long as you want.
Well, in fact, she's just on talking points. I've got to play for you, though, the exchange on elections. Cut number six between Savannah Guthrie and the vice president.
Let's talk about another comment the president made. He openly cast doubt on whether the 2022 midterm elections would be legitimate. He said it all depends, which is astonishing to hear a president question whether our elections will be legitimate. We've heard it before, but not from this president. Is he really concerned that we may not have fair and free elections?
The president has been consistent on this issue, and the issue at hand, the issue, I was there last night in the chamber of the Senate, and the issue is that there are two bills, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and the Freedom to Vote Act, that have been the solution that has been offered to address the fact that around our country, states have put in place laws that are purposely making it more difficult for the American people to vote. Laws which will be felt by at least 55 million Americans, regardless of their party affiliation, their race, their gender, or their geographic location.
Well, to the point, though, because the bills were debated and they didn't pass.
If I may finish.
But the specific question, if you don't mind, does he think now that these bills haven't been passed that the 22 midterms won't be legitimate or fair or free?
Let's not conflate issues. So what we are looking at, and
she's
and
the worst. Topic, she is really the worst public presenter. I thought she had talent. She does not have skills. And she is going to be his running mate, according to the befuddled Joe Biden. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Hugh Hewitt in California this morning. Thank you on this Friday, the 21st day of January in the year of our Lord, 2022. Kamala Harris, the White House was so desperate yesterday after the worst press conference in many, many decades, because Joe Biden's endless series of gaffes have always been politically disastrous, but they haven't caused a country to be at risk of invasion and its warriors at risk of death and its civilians at risk of starvation. A minor bit of Ukraine, you know, is that a mile? Is it 20 miles? Is it 30 miles? Is Taiwan a minor gulp from China? Is the Senkaku Islands a minor gulp for China's People's Liberation Army Navy? Questions I'll ask Secretary Pompeo at the start of the next hour. But they were so desperate to try and stop the free fall. I mean, the president can't go much lower. His AP disapproval rating is at 54%. His approval rating in Quinnipiac is at 33%. He could go below 30%. He's lower than Trump was at a similar point in the presidency. And he don't have any energy or competence to come back. And his idea that he's running in 2024 is simply laughable. So they were obliged to send out Kamala Harris. And they did. They sent her not only to Savannah Guthrie, where she got sliced and diced, they sent her to talk to Savannah Guthrie, I mean, to the CBS show with Gayle King. Here she is laughing about the virus. The virus killed 800,000 Americans, laughing away. Cut number eight.
Let's talk about COVID, because you all ran on, we are going to get COVID under control. We are going to get this lit. And as we sit here today, as you know, we're going into year three. We are still talking about COVID. And you all admit it. Listen, we've made some mistakes. We're going to do better. We're going to be better. The schools, can the kids go to schools? In New Mexico, the National Guard is being asked to be substitute teachers, all because of COVID. So it is not under control. So I'm wondering, what is your strategy here? And have you come to the point, have you come to the point that we have all got to figure out how to live with COVID?
So I'm going to try to unpack the various
there's a lot. Yeah, don't laugh about that lot. She tried. Cut number nine.
Let's turn to Ukraine and Russia, because I'm wondering if you all are having a cleanup in aisle three in the State Department today, where the president raised a couple of eyebrows when he seemed to make the distinction between a minor incursion and an all-out invasion. And so the people in Ukraine today, we understand, are very upset with that, because they believe that the president has given President Putin the green light. What do you say to that? Because it does seem to be very confusing.
So the president, let me just first tell you, I start every morning reading the presidential daily briefing, which contains classified information about threats to our national security and hotspots around the world. I am often in meetings in the Situation Room where the president and I and members of our leadership of our military, our intelligence community convene on these issues. The president of the United States, Joe Biden, has been very clear on the subject of Ukraine, which is that if Russia takes aggressive action, there will be severe and swift consequences, that there will
he
be
didn't
a price
seem to say
to
that yesterday, though, at the news conference. That's why there's some, that's why I think clarification is needed.
Well, we are very clear, and we've been very clear with Putin, that any aggressive action taken by Russia will meet a cost, a severe cost.
That is what the president should have said. Ron Klain, the White House chief of staff, scurried over to Morning Joe. They're all going to their safe spaces, right? They're all on NBC and CBS. Ron Klain, who I have enormous respect for, but doesn't want to come on the show because I would ask serious questions, scuttled over to MSNBC's Morning Joe to talk to the 10 people watching, said this, cut number 18.
Why were you all not better prepared for Omicron, especially on the testing front?
Well, first of all, we weren't surprised by Delta, and we were prepared for a future variant after that. What we did was we ramped up dramatically on tests.
Now, we do have a contradiction. Kamala Harris telling the LA Times they were surprised by it, so they haven't got their message straight. Jen Psaki was dispatched to the hostels. Dana Perina is a former press secretary. She's not going to crucify Jen Psaki, but Jen Psaki just lied through her teeth. Cut number 10.
So I'm curious if he will continue to say that those 2022 elections will be illegitimate.
Well, first, I've talked to the president a lot about this, and he absolutely is not predicting that the 2022 elections would be illegitimate. The point he was raising was both that in 2020, even amongst challenging circumstances, efforts to suppress the vote, and the midst of a pandemic, there was record turnout, Democrats and Republicans, record turnout to go to the polls. And the point he was making is that the former president asked a number of states, seven or more, in fact, to overturn the outcome of the election. Now, obviously, if there's an effort to do that, we've got to fight against that. That's what our commitment is to doing. But he was not making a prediction. He has confidence in the American people, and we're going to do everything we can to protect people's rights.
He mentioned the minority vote. I mean, he was pretty brash about it.
Yeah, he was pretty brash about it. The same question comes to Jen Psaki from Jake Tapper at CNN. Yes, even from CNN is not buying this stuff. Cut 11.
So I get that there are efforts on the state level, because this is also what the president was trying to tie it to, efforts on the state level to make it more difficult to vote. Some of that is no doubt born from the big lie. Some of it is nefarious. Some of it is election officials saying we're not in the middle of the pandemic like we were in November 2020. We don't need to do everything like we did. But I guess my bigger question is, if we're saying that there's no election that's legitimate if there are efforts to suppress the vote, then when has there ever been a legitimate election in this country? Trying to suppress American votes has been going on since the founding of this country.
That's not what we're saying, Jake. People should be confident in the protections that we are going to continue to enforce. But also, we know it's not long ago history. It is recent history.
Sure.
When the former president tried to overturn the outcome. That is different than the effort to suppress the vote. We need to fight against both. We need to ensure we're using every tool at our disposal. Obviously, a lot of those would be through the Democratic National Committee, and a lot of those are going to be through local efforts. And that's what the president was attempting to speak to.
But he didn't say the elections are going to be legitimate and I'm going to be there making sure that they are legitimate and we're going to fight and you need to turn out to vote. I mean, he basically refused to say that definitively that they're going to be legitimate. Vice President Harris today, also with Savannah Guthrie, also refused to say that the results will be legitimate. She pivoted to saying, quote, "We as America cannot afford to allow this blatant erosion of our democracy, and in particular, the right of all Americans who are eligible to vote to have access to the ballot unfettered." So I hear what you're saying, but you do not seem to be on the same page as the president and vice president.
I've spoken with the president about this extensively. I speak on his behalf. He is not questioning the legitimacy of the 2022 elections, but it is also his responsibility and the vice president's too, to be very candid and clear-eyed and communicate with the American people about what is at risk and what they need to ensure they know what their rights are and what the former president attempted to do in 2020. And we can't forget and stop talking about that.
Moving on to
the hot mess that Joe Biden left from his, yesterday his fan boys and fan girls in the legacy media inside the Beltway were praising him 2 days ago, the press conference, disaster day, praising him for going 2 hours. It took about 30 minutes for them to realize it was a disaster. Not long enough that they hadn't already gone on and tried to spin. They can't spin that. The entire country watched that. I looked at the ratings last night. 3.5 million people were watching Special Report. After I stopped watching the press conference, went on Special Report, and I looked at the ratings, and 3.5 million people, more people watched on Fox. They wanted to see the whole thing, and they watched the Fox News feed. And then they saw the panel and Brett and I talking about it, and it was an utter fiasco. Everybody knows that was, if not the worst presidential press conference in history, certainly the worst one of the last many years. And President Trump had some bad ones. He had some very good ones. But this was 2 hours of bad, out of touch, read my notes, flummoxed, flustered, unsure of what he's saying, reversing course, midfield course correction, yes is no, up is down, left is right, sky is green stuff. And Joe Biden is not good at this. He's infirm. And it took a lot out of him, and he got worse as it went on, and he got angry and garrulous and mad. But the most important thing to remember, and what I'll talk about with Secretary of State Pompeo next hour, is what he said. Cut number 42 first.
I'm not so sure that he has David, I'm not so sure he has is certain what he's going to do. My guess is he will move in. He has to do something.
And then cut number 43.
So I think what you're going to see is that Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having a fight about what to do and not do, et cetera.
Well, you know, it will live in infamy, in diplomatic and national security infamy, that press conference, minor incursion. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live in California this morning, joined by former Secretary of State of the United States, the Honorable Mike Pompeo. Good morning, Mr. Secretary. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Good morning, Hugh. It is great to be back with you.
Thank you for joining me. Just to set the stage for those who have not heard anything and been in a cave for a day, on Wednesday, President Biden, at an infamous now press conference, said two things I'd like you to comment on. First, cut number 42.
I'm not so sure that he has David, I'm not so sure he has is certain what he's going to do. My guess is he will move in. He has to do something.
And then cut number 43.
So I think what you're going to see is that Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having a fight about what to do and not do, et cetera.
They have been trying desperately to clarify this, Secretary Pompeo, since he uttered those two sentences. What did you make of the press conference? What do you make of its aftermath?
Well, Hugh, more importantly than what I think President Zelensky spoke to this very directly. There are no minor nations. There are no minor incursions. To have said that out loud, whether there were discussions in the background, probably with the Germans, about how we were going to respond given the nature of what Vladimir Putin might do, I understand those conversations. But to have done this, it's more than green light. It tells the world that the United States is not prepared to do the things that it has already promised to do, let alone making additional promises. Right? We have this commitment. We've told the Ukrainians we'll do the things we can to do to defend them, and to say, well, there are minor incursions and we may not be able to get this done, is truly concerning. Vladimir Putin, I think, knew this already. In some sense, he wasn't enlightening Putin. I think he knew that President Biden has demonstrated his unwillingness to defend the things that the Trump administration did, and we've lost the deterrence model that we had for 4 years. But it was really quite something to hear a president of the United States say that the former KGB agent, leader of Russia, an authoritarian dictator who has already moved into Kazakhstan, Belarus, into the Donbass, has room to grow and room to expand on his old Warsaw Pact network was really quite something. And I think the world took note. You can be sure that the Ukrainian people did.
Now, Mr. Secretary, this is your world from the CIA and the State Department and not the world of me or my listeners. Does Vladimir Putin now feel obliged to move or look weak to his people? And does yesterday's attempt to repair the political damage oblige Joe Biden to respond disproportionately to anything? And in other words, did the whole thing get blown up yesterday, 2 days ago?
It's a fair question. I don't think this changes Vladimir Putin's calculus materially. I think it reaffirms what he already knew. But his risk-benefit analysis probably didn't change yesterday. I think he had a good handle on the fact that his movement will have a relatively safe space and is unlikely to meet Steele until he's accomplished at least some, if not all, of the things he wants. Whether that's through rolling tanks and a motorized rifle division into Ukraine, if you think about the geography, it's likely that what he would try to do is capture Odessa, right? He would move to the west to try to cut off Ukraine, to cut it off from having access to ports and waterways. It's thinkable that you could see the troops that he's moved into Belarus. It's not far to Kaliningrad. For those listening, it's an old Soviet vestige of a deal that was cut before that sits astride Europe. It's not far from western Belarus to make this trip along the Lithuanian border to get there. I think that's probably a bridge too far. But to hear President Biden say this is greenlit and he now must do this, I think misses the point. Putin's going to do what makes sense for Vladimir Putin and his oligarchs, and he now believes he can do it against the United States. It's not prepared to do the simple things of supporting our European allies in the region and providing the defensive weapon systems that the Ukrainians need will ultimately need to carry this fight.
Mr. Secretary, I was on after the press conference with Brett Baer on Special Report, and I tried to indicate it's a major deal. I brought up Dean Acheson's January 1950 press club speech, which apparently green-lighted in the eyes of many North Korea's invasion of South Korea. Ambassador O'Brien on the show yesterday compared it to the July 25th meeting between Saddam Hussein and Ambassador April Glispie. What do you think it is?
Yeah, you can't clean this up, Hugh. I saw this in my 4 years as Secretary of State. The presidents speak, their words are understood. When his team goes out afterwards and says, no, that's not what he means, they go back and watch the tape. We know precisely what President Biden was thinking and talking about there, and so does the entire world. It certainly has ramifications for the Ukrainian people, for the region, for our friends in Eastern Europe, Poland, and in the Baltics. But I think the whole world saw a president go on and said, look, there are things you can get away with now that you couldn't get away with a few years ago, and this portends real risk for the United States and our interests around the world as a result of this. You can't clean it up, Hugh. No chief of staff, no White House spokesperson, no off-the-record deputy national security advisor can fix what the president of the United States told the world that day.
Now, in minor incursion, in Putin's mind, do you think that would include Lithuania or the disputed portion? They're not in dispute, but Putin attempts to dispute the portions of the Baltic borders. Do you think minor incursion encourages him to look there?
I don't think Vladimir Putin thinks in terms of minor or major incursion. I think he sees it that way. He sees the dissolution of the Soviet Union as the greatest calamity of last century, and he's aiming to fix it. If he has to do so piecemeal and chunk by chunk, this will be his plan. And so it was Crimea 6 years ago, and I think his efforts in the Donbas over the last years are continuing to lay the base. You see the troop movement. You see equipment moving in. The equipment moving in as well to Belarus and into Western Russia. This portends Vladimir Putin, who has made a decision that he's going to push just as far as he can until he meets resistance. He doesn't say, I'm going to do a major incursion or a minor incursion. He says, I'm going to go achieve the imperialistic agenda that I have for my country.
Now, we have to think about the Chinese Communist Party as well, Mr. Secretary, about Taiwan, about the Senkaku Islands, about islands off the Philippines that are part of the Philippines. Did that statement register in Beijing?
This was my point about others around the world hearing this as well. Certainly the Chinese Communist Party would observe that. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Chairman Kim observed that too and might decide to do what they alluded to yesterday, go back to begin to test nuclear weapons. Again, a very dangerous thing to the United States of America. Certainly every authoritarian regime, whether it's the Ayatollah, who is still sitting with our team in Vienna, in spite of the fact he's now fired rockets at places that many Americans are in Abu Dhabi, ballistic missiles into our friend and ally, the United Arab Emirates. Now, these authoritarian thugs understand one thing. They understand power. Deterrence can only be achieved through strength. And when you see a president say this is a minor incursion, and gosh, we know he has to do something now to save face, suggesting somehow that the United States would permit this in order to allow Vladimir Putin to save face, right? The implication was, Hugh, that this was inevitable. Right, that Vladimir Putin had to do this, and gosh darn it, who are we to stop him from this inevitability? This is not the kind of talk United States presidents engage in when deterrence is the objective.
There's a famous quote, a small country far away and a people about whom we know little. That's Neville Chamberlain describing the giveaway of Czechoslovakia to Hitler in the Munich negotiation. Is there an air of appeasement about this administration?
We've seen it on multiple fronts. whether it was the way in which Afghanistan was abandoned to leave 13 Americans dead and many Americans still behind. We've certainly seen that with respect to what happened when the Russians shut down our pipelines in Southeast United States, when Russian hackers from their own country did that. We appeased. We said, don't do that again. We gave the Russians a treaty without asking for anything to start. We allowed them to build out without being sanctioned the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, gaining power over Germany, which in the end is the mission statement for Vladimir Putin. He will try to strike the fear of God in Germany so that Germany will muck up a NATO response to his efforts in Ukraine. Yes, I think it's absolutely the case that you can feel an administration not prepared to do the things one needs to do to deter, and that is the inverse of appeasement.
At the conclusion of the presser, a frazzled and dismayed president who was quite clearly desperate to turn around the conversation said this. Cut number 45, please.
I wonder what would be the Republican platform right now. What do you think? What do you think their position on taxes are? What do you think their position on human rights is?
I dropped my pen right there, Mr. Secretary, and I know at CavPack.com you talk about human rights. What was your position on human rights? Certainly it wasn't giving away Ukraine or going to the Chinese Olympic genocide games.
We defended the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. We defended the Patriarchate in Turkey. We declared the Chinese Communist Party's efforts to co-opt the Catholic Church and conduct genocide in this country. We were proud that we worked on defending the rights of every individual around the world. It doesn't mean putting thousands of soldiers in lots of places, Hugh. It means establishing a benchmark for what America will do to protect not only those people, but the United States itself.
Secretary Mike Pompeo, thank you for joining me.
Have a great day, sir.
You too. To follow what Secretary Pompeo is doing, go to CavPack.com. You get updates there every day. People ask me where he is. He's at CavPack, working for American security every day. CavPack.com. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt live in California this morning, talking with United States Senator Rick Scott, represents the great state of Florida. He's also chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, regular guest on the show. Senator Scott, welcome back. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Hugh. Every month, Biden goes down, and our chances of taking the Senate go back up.
I agree with that. I want to get into that. I want to start, though, with something about which you'll have unique knowledge. The press has been floating the idea that the governor you work with, Ron DeSantis, is your friend, and the former president that you know and visited Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump, are having a war. And so President Trump went on Hannity last night and said this, cut number 37.
Well, he is right. I get along great with Ron. Ron was very good on the Mueller hoax. He was right up front along with Jim Jordan and all of the rest of them. They were fantastic. The Republicans really stuck together, and it was a great thing. And Ron was one of them. And Ron wanted to run, and I endorsed him, and that helped him greatly. And he went on, and he's done a really terrific job in Florida, and I think, you know, Ron has been very good. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. It's totally fake news. I think Ron said last week, he said it very publicly, he says, the press is never going to get in the middle of my friendship with Donald Trump.
Senator Scott, is those, there were more than one reports of that feud. Are they fake news?
I talked to both of them, and it's never come up in any of those conversations, and so I've never seen it. I hope it's not true, and I don't believe it's true. So, but you have to listen, talk to both of them. But it's never come up in my conversation. Every time I'm talking to the president, he's helping me. You know, he's saying, "What can I do to make sure you get the Senate back?"
And I just believe that the media. No, this is my conviction. The media knows that Joe Biden is toast, that your committee and the House counterpart are going to win in the fall. And so they're trying to drum up Donald Trump stories, even if they have to make up conversations in order to support them. You think I'm on the mark?
You know, I think you are, Hugh. I mean, it never comes up in my conversations.
All right. Let's go to the consequences of that disastrous presser on Wednesday. First of all, were you watching it live, or did you have to read about it later, Senator Rick Scott?
Well, we were in the middle of working on voting. Remember, they were working on getting rid of the filibusters so they could pass the radical agenda Schumer was in the Senate. So that's where my focus was. But I read about it, and I watched it afterwards. And Joe Biden is a clown. He's completely incompetent. He has no plan to deal with anything. He'll pass the buck constantly. Like, he's not responsible for inflation, even though he's the one who shut down the Keystone Pipeline. He's the one who's done nothing. His team has done nothing to deal with the supply chain. His group is the one that get paid people, you know, more money to not work than to work. But he's not has any responsibility for that. He's never responsible for the Afghanistan debacle. He's not responsible for anything. And he has no plan. They don't do anything.
Now, in that press conference, he decided to attack Republicans. I want to play for you Cut 45.
I wonder what would be the Republican platform right now. What do you think? What do you think their position on taxes are? What do you think their position on human rights is?
So, Senator Rick Scott, you're out with all of our candidates. I couldn't believe he teed that up for you that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. Their plan, Biden, Schumer, Pelosi's plan, has been devastating for this country. You look at an open, completely open border. 100,000 people died of drug overdose. China's threatening Taiwan. Russia's on the border of Ukraine. Gas prices up, food prices, shelves empty. I mean, you see all these things, and he wants to just attack Republicans. He's the president. He's responsible. When I was governor of Florida, whatever happened, you had to take responsibility, and you had to solve it. But he has never in his life taken any responsibility, and the Democrats, they're in la-la land. I mean, they're the anti-democracy party. All they want to do is play politics and steal elections.
They have also become, incredibly to me, Senator Scott, the anti-parent party. In Virginia, school boards are rejecting the new governor, Glenn Youngkin's, executive order offering parental choice. Some school districts are considering increasing the quarantine of children. The devastation of children through this COVID has not registered on the Democratic Party at the local, the state, or the national level. Are you advising the candidates you're helping get ready for the fall to concentrate on parental rights and children rights?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the reasons why we're going to win is that parents are going to be involved in these school board races. You know, it's always hard to raise money, get people active in school board races. Not now. All across this country, people are saying that those people have an impact on my kids' future. And I'm not going to let these incompetent people that are controlled by the teachers union run my kids' life and ruin my kids' ability to get a good education, because every parent knows that the future is their kids' education. And so I think we're going to have unbelievable turnover in school boards, and it's going to help Republicans win all across the board, in the House and in the Senate, all across the board this time. And people are going to be active in these school board races.
Now, Senator Rick Scott, I believe, but I won't know until November, that the Democrats' attempt to kill the filibuster was understood by the public to be a radical and destabilizing move to undo the nature of the Senate that has grown up over 120 years. I believe that Mark Kelly in Arizona voting to kill the filibuster, Michael Bennett in Colorado voting to kill the filibuster, Cortez Masto in Las Vegas, Warnock in Georgia, Hassan in New Hampshire, all voting to kill the filibuster, make those five senators vulnerable. Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. I think what everybody is seeing is the Democrats have become the anti-democracy party. They have become very radical. They're controlled by the teachers union. They're controlled by the most radical left part of their party. I mean, Schumer's case, he's scared to death that AOC will run against him in a primary. But the others, I don't get it. Mark Kelly, Arizona is still a Republican state. Cortez Masto is already behind in the polls. Hassan is behind in the polls. Warnock is behind in the polls. I mean, we have every reason to believe we can win those four states, plus we can win in Colorado. We've got a great candidate in the state of Washington. And there's a poll out that Murray, who's been there forever, the Democrat in the state of Washington, is only up 3 points with a generic Republican. And we've got a great Republican running there, Tiffany Smiley.
So, Ken, let's walk through each of these. Let's go to Arizona. The primary won't be until late, but Mark Kelly defined himself as radical, in contrast to his other state senator, Senator Sinema, also a Democrat who rejected the effort to undermine the Senate stability. Does Mark Kelly survive that lurch to the left?
No. I mean, let's remember, this is still a Republican state, right? And Mark Kelly promised he was a moderate. Now he votes 100% with Chuck Schumer, He does everything Chuck Schumer tells him to do. So we're going to get a great candidate out of the primary. We've got a lot of good people running. And so it'll be a tough race, but we're going to win there. If you just think about it, look at that generic ballot across the country. People are rejecting the Democrats. So our job is just to explain that Mark Kelly is actually a Democrat. He's not a moderate. He's not an independent. He's a far left, Chuck Schumer Democrat. That's not going to play well in Arizona.
Let's talk now about Las Vegas and Nevada. John Ralston, who I like a lot, he used to be a reporter. He is now obviously an advocate and is cheerleading Cortez Masto and slagging on Adam Laxalt, who he has a vendetta against. He said yesterday online or the day before that Cortez Masto had dramatically outraised Adam Laxalt. I'm not sure what he means by dramatically outraised. What's the situation in Nevada?
It doesn't matter. I mean, the problem that Cortez Masto has is she's Chuck Schumer. So when you vote for Cortez Masto, you're voting for Chuck Schumer in Nevada. That's not what they want right now. Right now, we're already beating Cortez Masto. When you look at the public polls that are out there, a Republican is winning. And so there's no reason we shouldn't win in Nevada also. They're rejecting Cortez Masto. People are sick and tired of just go through it. I mean, she votes for an open border. She votes to close schools. She won't stand up to Biden on anything. She just, whatever Chuck Schumer says, yes, sir, that's how she votes.
Now, Senator Warnock went with President Biden to Atlanta to give now the infamous speech in which he compared you and me and everybody listening to this show and everyone who wants local control of elections to Bull Connor, George Wallace, and Jefferson Davis. He tried to apologize, but then doubled down in his press conference. Is Raphael Warnock underwater, and is Herschel Walker beating him in trial heats?
Absolutely. First off, let's remember, I think all those individuals they were talking about were Democrats. And Democrats are the ones that wanted to limit the vote of African Americans in this country. So Herschel Walker is already beating Warnock. We released a poll in December. Herschel's running a very good race. He still has a primary, but he's way ahead. So he's already ahead of Warnock. Warnock is sort of the Doug Jones of this cycle. Georgia is still going to go Republican. We have a governor's race, we have a Senate primary. We're going to do really well in Georgia. It's still a Republican state.
Take me up to New Hampshire. You wanted Governor Sununu. The president actually read Governor Sununu's comments. I don't know if that's going to be an issue in the campaign, but will you have a great candidate in New Hampshire? And is Senator Hassan looking weak?
So Hassan's already underwater. She's been running ads since September to try to move her numbers up. It's not working. Because she's voting 100% with Chuck Schumer. I mean, you don't elect Chuck Schumer and Chris Sununu in the same state. Just stop and think about it like that. So we've got General Don Bolduc already in the race. It looks like the state senator, Chuck Morris, is going to get in the race. The Londonderry Township manager, Kevin Smith, is looking at the race, and there's others. So we're going to have the – some people think it's a negative or a primary slate, but what's going to happen is it's going to give us way more press. And Hassan's not going to get better. She's defined. It's very difficult for people where in as bad a shape as Hassan is in to change her numbers.
So my last question is about Colorado, because Michael Bennett, I didn't have him on my list of vulnerables, but Joe Biden is so bad. The numbers are so terrible for Democrats. And then Michael Bennett voted to undo the filibuster, which is radical. Do you have a candidate out there who can beat him?
Well, first off, it's Cory Gardner was running this year. We would clearly win. Absolutely. We've got Eli Bremmer's in the race. Campagna's in the race. Looks like there might be some other people getting in the race. So I think we have a great, great opportunity. The Bennett has got a lackluster image. I mean, people don't even know who he is. He ran for president. People even don't know that. He voted the wrong way. So I think we have every reason to believe we can win. When you go back and you look, I mean, look, any state that Biden won by less than 10 points is a battleground state now. That's how bad the Democrats are going. Just look at Virginia and look at New Jersey. In New Jersey, we almost won the governor's race and didn't spend any money. So we have every reason to believe. I was with Kevin McCarthy. The House is going to do a great job. They're going to take back the House. As they get those votes out, it's going to help us win Senate races.
Senator Rick Scott, it is always great to go over the map with you. Thank you for making time for me. Senator Rick Scott of Florida is leading the NRSC effort across the country.
working harder than any man I know in D.C., Rick Scott. I mean, it's like 25 hours a day with the guy. Thank you, Senator.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.